working. And the Royals have won back-to-back 3-2 games against the Blue Jays.
And the Royals, back on the winning track after a three-game losing streak and losing four of their five going into the first game, after the first game of that series with the Blue Jays. They've now won two in a row again. So back to their winning ways are the Kansas City Royals, again with that 3-2 victory, as the Royals now are 15-10 after that win. Welcome into the Sports Ticket here on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. Glad to have you with us. Sports Ticket brought to you, as always, by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. They're your home team for fast and friendly auto repair. Find them south of the courthouse in Beloit. Kiever Brothers Automotive, we thank them for bringing you the Sports Ticket. Excuse me, here on Katy Country 94. We'll go ahead and knock the Royals out of the way here early. Coming up, we'll have a quick look at local sports. We have a new coach here in the area. It's an old, not necessarily a new coach, but a new gig. First time he's ever had a football coaching stop, and we'll talk about that coming up here on the Sports Ticket. Also, we have our Athlete of the Week. Quick look at today's schedule in local sports, and also the Chiefs getting prepared for the draft. We'll look at the NFL draft, preview that, and the NBA and NHL playoffs rolling on, all coming up here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Once again, the Royals winning 3-2 over the Blue Jays. They took a 2-0 lead with RBI singles from Salvador Perez and Michael Garcia in the first and second, and Alec Marsh was dealing with four and a third innings, was doing great, allowed just two hits, no runs, and took a line drive off of his forearm on his pitching arm, and luckily it doesn't look like there's any breaks or anything like that. It doesn't look like he's going to miss a substantial amount of time. He might miss his next start, just getting back and going. We're not sure on that. It's a day-to-day thing, but he did exit the game after still making the play, getting hit in the forearm. It rolled and got away from him a bit, but he was able to get it over to Vinny Pascantino at first and make the play and get the out. But at that point, he exited the game. So with just 4 1/3, he was not eligible for the win, despite, again, giving up just two hits and no runs there in the process of his start, but having to leave early with injury. But the bullpen picked him up. The Blue Jays did get a solo homer from George Springer in the fifth to get back within one at 2-1, but the Royals answered an RBI single from Bobby Witt Jr. in the bottom of the fifth inning, and then Toronto would add another in the sixth, but the Royals finishing off three straight scoreless innings from the bullpen, and James MacArthur notched his sixth save of the year. The offensive opportunities weren't abundant for the Royals. There wasn't a lot of them. But Mac Quatrero, the manager of the Royals, did like what his team did in certain situations.
That was a opportunistic, you know, couple, you know, Bobby stealing, getting the error. That was a good way to start. Salvi driving him in. You know, the ball when Izzy was running, Michael, good swing on that ball to go first to third. So, I mean, we're going to have to do that. We, you know, the long ball wasn't part of it tonight, so it was good to you know, still only three runs, but that's, you know, made the pitching made it stand up.
Yeah, pitching absolutely made it stand up. Pitching's been a big thing and reason the Royals have won when they've won. They're 15-10. Obviously, you have to have pitching and hitting and all of that to work together to get a lot of wins strung together. But a couple wins after, again, a three-game losing streak for the Royals, so back in the right direction with that win. John Schreiber ended up getting the win. He pitched an inning, no hits, no runs, and is 2-0 on the season. Again, MacArthur with his sixth save for the Royals. And they'll finish out their series with the Blue Jays today. 1-10 first pitch at Kauffman Stadium, the Royals and Blue Jays in their fourth game of four. Cole Reagans, he was not good last time out. Just got shelled, to be completely honest with you. Gave up seven runs on nine hits in just an inning and two thirds in a 9-7 loss to Baltimore on Saturday. So Reagans looks to bounce back. He's had some up and down games, 10 hits against Houston, but then came back, allowed just five in six innings against the Mets. And then against the Orioles, as we mentioned, he gave up the nine hits and seven earned runs. He didn't give up as many runs there in that Houston game, but Cole Reagans looking to get back on track here this afternoon. Again, 0-2 with a 4.32 ERA. Jose Berrios has been outstanding for the Blue Jays. Last time out, he no runs, five hits, six innings. No runs, two hits, seven innings the game before that. He's pitched three straight games where he's not allowed a run, and that's in 19 and two-thirds innings. He's given up 11 hits in that time, five walks, but he's also struck out 19 during that process as well. So Berrios having a outstanding start to the season for the Blue Jays, and he'll be on the mound this afternoon to get a 110 first pitch from Kauffman Stadium, wrapping up that series between the Royals and Blue Jays. Royals looking to get a win to get a series victory. The Blue Jays are looking for a win just to get out of there with a split at 2-2. Royals 15-10, 2.5 games behind the Guardians in first place, the AL Central at 17-7. The Blue Jays are 13-12. They're 4 games behind the Yankees, who are in first at 17-8. The Orioles are half game back there in the East at 16-8. Again, Royals, Blue Jays 1-10 this afternoon from Kauffman Stadium. All right, we'll shift our attention to local sports now. There's quite a bit of stuff going on in local sports. It's been a busier spring than it normally is, and part of that is because there's been coaches that have stepped down and new coaches that have been named, and we've had another one this week. Earlier this week, Keith Christine was named the head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojan basketball team, and St. John's Tipton was looking for a new football coach ever since Dean Gingler announced that he was stepping down after 5 seasons. Late October, he resigned, leading the program to a 26-21 record in that time. The new coach, pretty familiar name. Lance Bergman will be coaching them with the St. John's Tipton football team, as he has never been a football coach as far as school is concerned. I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet about the job, so I don't know if he's coached any flag football or anything like that in the past. But he played football, obviously, in high school, and people would know that. But again, he's not had the experience as a football coach. His first football job at the high school level for sure. And his roots do run deep, though, at St. John's. 2001 graduate at St. John's Catholic High School. And he's been the boys' basketball coach since the 2009-10 season. Coached one season as just St. John's. And then the cooperative with Tipton began 2010-11 until now. He's been the basketball coach. 255-93 overall record in that time. He's led the boys to the state tournament 6 times for St. John's Tipton, including a 1A Division II state title in 2014, 10 years ago. So, again, Lance Bergman, the new head coach of the St. John's Tipton football team. You can read more at ncastsports.com. I've reached out to Coach Bergman to try to get an interview with him, and once he feels comfortable doing that and understanding what the position is, we're happy for Lance. I know he's again, it's his first head football coaching job at high school level, so he's going to learn some things and start putting in some of his motivational skill. That's one thing you know about Coach Bergman, is that he'll have his kids motivated and he'll care a lot about them too. So that's never going to be an issue with Coach Bergman and wondering if he's there for the right reasons for sure. So we're looking forward to working with Coach Bergman on the football side of things. I've been working with Lance for a lot of years and have known him even before he took the job as the head boys basketball coach. So it's been fun to see his teams grow in basketball, and I think it'll be fun to see what he can do with that football program at St. John's Tipton as well. So we congratulate Lance, and again, we'll hope to talk with him and have an interview with him and get his thoughts about being the coach of the St. John's Tipton football team at some point here in the next days or maybe next week or at some point. We, again, hope to talk with Coach Bergman about this new opportunity. So, again, that's what we have for that portion. Ellsworth boys have named a new basketball coach as well after Brett Rolfs turned in his resignation after a couple seasons about a week and a half ago. Pending approval from the USD 327 Board of Education, Jeff Landon has been named the new head coach of the Ellsworth boys basketball program. Previous coaching experience at the collegiate level for 10 years, and prior to that served as an assistant with the Ellsworth girls basketball team for 4 seasons. Ron Davis, the AD at Ellsworth, said, "We're excited to welcome Coach Landon back to the Bearcat family. Coach is a fundamental teacher of the game of basketball, brings leadership and strong ties back to Ellsworth. He takes over the boys program, as we mentioned, from Brett Rolfs, who went 31-14 in that time, the 2-year span, and 19-5 season in 2023-24, the 3A state tournament appearance. There'll have to be some replenishing. There were a lot of seniors on that Ellsworth team, including Will Cravens, an all-state player for the Bearcats. So Coach Landon will have some work to do there. But again, Jeff Landon named the new head coach of the Ellsworth boys basketball team. I had to check my email because there's some stuff on here from Kyle Beiser that has been sent this morning. One just says announcement for the subject. So We'll see. That's going to be something different that's not sports related. But junior high track is postponed today at Republic County. The plan is to reschedule for Monday, May 6th. So, again, junior high track today is postponed. And, that's what we have at the moment for... I got a couple of notes, but one of them is not pertinent to the sports ticket, so we'll pass that along in a different way at some point. Other local sports notes, we do have our Athlete of the Week, Lakeside senior Ian Kersine, has been named the NCCastSports.com Cunningham Fiber Athlete of the Week. Kersine had an outstanding day at the Kansas 8-Man Football Association State Powerlifting Meet this past Saturday, claiming the overall state championship in the 165-pound weight class, lifting a total of 955 pounds, 80 pounds more than his closest competitor. On his way to the overall title, he finished first place in two of the three lifts. In the bench, he lifted 290 pounds, besting his top competitor by 30 pounds. He also won the squat at 400 pounds, also 30 pounds better than second place. And he finished actually in a tie for first in the clean at 265, but due to his overall weight being a pound and a half heavier than the competitor, he took second in the event in the end. So basically that means if you can lift more of your body weight than the other person, you finish a little bit ahead of that person, even though you're in the same weight class and lifted the same amount of weight. That's, you know, there's always different ways to do tiebreakers. I don't think that's a bad way to do a tiebreaker, because they always say you should be able to lift whatever, twice your body weight. I don't know what it, whatever it is, right? I was never quite that strong, but there maybe you should be able to bench your body weight or something like that. Never got close to that, I don't think. I was not overly strong when it came to the weightlifting stuff. I think that's a decent way to break a tie, right? If you can lift more of your overall body weight and there's a same lift that's involved there. So didn't affect Kersine's overall. He is the state champion at 165 pounds, KMFA State Powerlifting, and our Athlete of the Week. It's his first overall state title. He did have success the past two seasons at state. He finished third in each 2022 and 23 at 181 pounds, but again, winning the 165-pound weight class here this year. Ian Kersine, the state champion of powerlifting, and our NCKSSports.com Cunningham Fiber Athlete of the Week. So congratulations to Ian. If you have an Athlete of the Week nomination, you can always get it to us. Just let us know if you have our numbers or Facebook messages, Twitter. You can check out the website for more information as well, ncksports.com. On the schedule today for high school sports, the Russell Invitational is scheduled for 11 o'clock this morning in boys golf. Osborne and Smith Center from the area are set to compete there. Check and see if that's still on for today. There's one place that I know I could probably go to double check that, and don't see anything as far as any alerts at the moment that it's been postponed, but we'll keep you up to date on that if anything would happen, and keep in the loop. NCKSports.com has all the local sports schedules here in North Central Kansas. All right, we shift our attention now in on the sports ticket to see where I want to go. I'm going to actually kind of conclude with the draft part, probably. K-State yesterday announced in college football that they'll open their 2025 season across the Atlantic in the Emerald Isle. The Wildcats will play in the Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin, Ireland, August 23rd, 2025, against Big 12 foe Iowa State. The game will be the first ever Big 12 matchup in Ireland. K-State coach Chris Kleiman said in a statement, quote, We couldn't be more excited to be chosen to play in the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Our players and staff are excited to expose our program to a global audience, and the cultural experience will also be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for all of Wildcat Nation, unquote. There's more on this kstatesports.com. K-State is, much like the Chiefs did when they played in Germany, giving up a home game to do this and go to Ireland. So, it's going to be interesting just to see how all this plays out. D. Scott Fritchin has a good article and story on kstatesports.com about this opportunity. I've gotten, you get to the point where it's, I've talked about this when they moved the Stanford game from Manhattan to Dallas, Arlington, to Jerry's Palace or whatever kingdom, whatever you want to call it. Jerry World is what you call it, right? In Arlington, Texas there. And they moved the what was supposed to be a home game in Manhattan with Stanford to Arlington. And I remember, like, when that happened, you know, there's a lot of people that are excited about it. It's awesome. It's great for exposure. It's this, it's that. I always contend that a home campus is where college football games should be played. It's college football. It's about the university that's playing in the game. And one of the things that I'll never understand about moving a home game to Arlington, Texas, or in this case, Dublin, Ireland. Listen, when I say all this, I understand why they're doing it, and I'll get to that. But one of the biggest things that people say is, like, it's exposure for the athletes because they get a prime spot on TV and this and this and this. Okay, I get it. Isn't the game still on TV if it's in Manhattan and they can get a prime spot? You know, they moved games. They've moved a game to a Friday night again this year. And that'll be a prime spot. It'll be on TV and one of the only things to watch that night if you're there watching college football. Myself, I'll be covering high school football on a Friday night. So that one never really registers with me. And I think the bigger thing that I don't like about this is, like, you're taking away games. Iowa State travels. So whether you're going to fill 50,000 in just Manhattan residents and K-State fans or not, Iowa State will have butts in those seats as well when they come to Manhattan. And so I can this is what I said last time, and every time this something like this happens, when you take that out of Manhattan, life isn't fair. I get it. That K-State's going to make a lot of money off of this. They're going to profit very nicely by doing this. Whether that's, you know, TV viewership, whatever it all entails. I don't even think we are even aware of how much money this entails and how much K-State can make off of it, right, as an athletic department. And I understand it. I get it. Ireland has been the spot where teams have gone. Notre Dame obviously has played games in Ireland. They've done three of them. At least Nebraska played Northwestern there to open out the 2022 season. Navy and Notre Dame played there again, so the fourth time last year that Notre Dame had gone over there. Or actually, Notre Dame, I think, maybe just has gone twice now that I'm looking at this, because Georgia Tech and Boston College played in Ireland in 2016. But again, there have been games that have taken place in Ireland. I get it. It's the moment. It's fun to do. It's fun to play a game overseas. It's fun to get your brand out there to a worldwide audience in this case, and I understand that. I understand why K-State is doing this from that aspect of, hey, they're going to see that power cat on the side of the helmet or whatever they decide to wear that day, which would most likely be the power cat on the side of the helmet because they have all these white variations that they don't ever use. It's whatever. I'm not going to get into that part of it right now. But and then Iowa State will have the opportunity to showcase their talent as well. Maybe they'll have a green power cat on their helmet since they're in Ireland. I don't know what, you know, they might do something special for that. But and Iowa State might have a green I-State or Cyclone or whatever it might be. But I get the exposure that both of these schools are going to get worldwide from being at this event. And I don't dismiss that idea. I don't dismiss what that does for the athletic department. Keywords being athletic department. What this does for the Manhattan community is takes away a home game where there's going to be a lot of people coming in, spending a lot of money, whether it's at a restaurant, whether it's at, you know, retail, whatever it is. It's motels. It's, you know, some people, depending on what time the game is, are going to stay there. They're going to, you know, hit their impact in the economy of Manhattan and impacting local, right? And that's the biggest thing that I don't like about moves like this. You know, there's been, even at the high school level, I know towns that don't agree with decisions made by colleges to not have state events in their town because it's a cash cow for the economy. But if the college doesn't want to take it on and they don't want to do it, then the town just, I'm not going to say they suffer, but they don't get that extra boost that they're used to getting. And again, we shouldn't take any of that for granted. You shouldn't just expect that to happen. You know, even with what we do here at the radio station during basketball season, there was a decision that was made that impacted us for sure, impacted a lot of people. But we move on, right? Nothing's ever set in stone. Life's not always going to work out the way you plan it to, because if it did, what fun would that be anyway? But that's the only thing I don't like about these kind of moves, is it takes away from the experience for the fans that can actually afford to go to the game, which is another thing. It's, some of these things are being priced out for the regular fan anyway, even if it's a regular home game. Now you're moving this to Ireland, and, you know, it'll be fun. And there'll be some probably people, Irish people, that are showing up to the game in K-State gear. Don't even know who they are, but they're going to be there to support them. But the obviously the crowd's not going to be the same in Ireland and Dublin that it would be if this game was in Manhattan, from a K-State and Iowa State perspective, because, like I say, Iowa State's one of actually the best at traveling and getting out and supporting their university, especially in venues that are not all that far away from Ames. So that's the thing that I don't like about this, and I never have liked it, never will like it, but this is where we've evolved in college sports and in sports in general. I mean, everybody wants to do this worldwide thing and get it out to the masses, not only in this country, but around the entire world. I don't know. I just, listen, it's exciting. It'll be a unique opportunity, obviously, for the players to be able to go over to Dublin, Ireland, and play. And get that experience, and I don't want to take that away from the student athletes either, who get that chance to do that, and that'll be cool for them. It'll be cool for a lot of people that are involved with this, but I think selfishly, most people that can't afford a ticket or can't take the time at that time of year to go to Ireland are going to be very disappointed, and are very disappointed that they're losing a home game off of their season ticket package, and, you know, the opportunities aren't always large for home games, and then whether you move them to a Friday, that's going to affect your attendance, but it's not going to affect the TV sets, and that's why people are doing all this. This is why schools and colleges, universities, no matter who's doing it, this is why they're doing it. It affects TV sets in a way that is all positive. There's really no negatives to any of these moves based on the television part of it. I still argue that people can be watching that game on TV no matter where it's at, when it is, but obviously if you're not competing with a lot of other games at the same time by moving a game to a Friday night, you're in a better situation. Playing a game on August, what did I say, 25th? Or 20... Here, I got to go back up. Playing a game on August 23rd, 2025, you're not going to be against a lot because it's week zero. There's no other real primetime games probably going to be going on when K-State and Iowa State play this game in Ireland. So again, I understand it. I get it. I'm not a fan of it, but I understand why they do it. They're making plenty of money for the university. They're giving an experience for everybody, and you're pretty much not against anybody on the TV set for this occasion. Now, the Stanford game, I still don't at all agree with that, moving that to Arlington, because it took away one from the economy. It's K-State Stanford. It's a prime matchup, and it was not put somewhere where it wasn't against other games. It was still on Saturday. It was, I believe, a morning slot where a lot of people are watching a lot of different games at that time. So that didn't make a difference. And it took away a prime non-conference game from Manhattan to where people were excited. Everybody's like, well, they got six other home games. What's the big deal? Yeah, okay, I'd rather watch Stanford in Manhattan than Tennessee Tech or whoever it was that year. I don't even remember what the schedule was, but you know, that was the contention at the time. This is a little different because it is week zero. They're moving it, but it's the fact remains that they have given up a home game to go to Ireland. And I know a lot of fans that are season ticket holders are not going to enjoy that, and they're not going to like that. And I know the community of Manhattan is definitely not going to like that. So, but again, we move on. You do what you do, and excited to see this. I really am excited to see K-State get that national exposure and international exposure, and everybody be having a chance to watch the program. K-State and Iowa State are definitely going to benefit greatly from the decision as far as the athletic department is concerned. But, you know, the concern is just always about the fans, and I've said for multiple years now that the people that make these kind of decisions, the fan experience part of it's not even on their mind anymore. And the amount of fans that are in their stadium, you know, I always laugh because they talk about, oh, here's a sellout here, here's a sellout here. And it's like, Yeah, but do you actually care? I mean, your ticket sales are not what's driving anything anymore. It used to be the case, right? Ticket sales used to drive whether you were going to be able to stay in the Big 8 conference for K-State, but back when they were not having attendance and they were terrible in the late 80s, futility you. But ticket sales don't drive that anymore. It is TV ratings and streaming ratings and whatever it all entails. Your media rights drive your decision-making in college athletics today. And it's sad, but that's just where we've come to. And so I'm not talking about K-State when I say in general these athletic departments don't really care about the number of people that are in those seats as long as they're getting TV money and people are watching their product on TV or whether they're streaming it, whatever it is. You know, we've gone over all that as far as the landscape and the changes that have happened in your video viewing experience, whether that be on TV, streaming, satellite. Again, most everything will be streaming, not just sports, but everything you watch is probably going to come through an internet connection not too far from now. I always say everything that I watch is coming through an internet connection. Anything I'm watching in my house, except if I put a DVD in or a Blu-ray, I guess. Still have the physical media from that aspect. But otherwise, anything live that I'm watching, it's coming through internet stream. So that's where we're at, and that's where colleges and universities are at. That's what they care about. They care about the ratings and the revenue and the money that's coming in, and obviously to keep a college program going and keep it successful, that's what you need. And I don't fault them for that from that aspect, but you know, I also don't want to hear them say how important fans in the stands are when I don't know if that's the case. You want to have those fans in the stands to support your athletes and give them a little bit of a boost. But as far as the boost to the athletic department, I really don't know how much that makes a difference, to be honest with you, as long as they're making their money off the TV and media rights deals. So, again, K-State moving their game to Ireland with Iowa State. It'll be August 23rd, 2025 season. Again, not this coming season, but the 2025 season, so a little over a year and a half from now. Is when this will, a little less than a year and a half, I guess, from now, is when this will take place. All the games are in United States soil in 2024, but you can read more again about that at kstatesports.com. All right, NFL draft is tonight, so stay tuned. I'll talk about that a bit here coming up. Let me first I make sure that I just clicked on a new tab. I want to make sure there's no noise coming through it, but let's talk about the NBA playoffs before we get to the NFL draft. NBA and NFL playoffs are rolling on. And last night there were just two games on the docket. Big win for the Heat in Boston to even their series out. The Celtics have the best record in the NBA by far this year. And you would think that this is a Celtics year, right? But the Heat, even without Jimmy Butler, winning 111-101 over the Celtics to tie that series at one game apiece. As we mentioned, winning game two of the Heat. Very balanced scoring effort as Tyler Hero had 24 and 14 assists to lead Miami, and a double-double for Bam Adebayo with 21 and 10 rebounds and also 21 points by Caleb Martin. Hero made 6 threes. Martin had 5. The Heat made 23 threes in the win compared to just 12 for the Celtics. 33 points for Jaylen Brown, 28 for Jason Tatum. You know, you look at that, you're combining for 61 out of the 101, so just 40 points from other sources. Did I do the math right? Yeah, I did. I do that quick in my head. I'm like, math was never my strong suit. But, you know, adding numbers has been something that I've improved on just based off of scoring differentials and things like that throughout my career. But, yeah, they're going to need other people to step up, and that did not really happen last night for the Celtics. Again, they fall 111-101 in Game 2. And also in the Western Conference, boy, the Thunder looked pretty good last night. They jumped out to an early lead and led 35-22 after the first quarter. Never really looked back. 124-92 final for the Thunder. Zion Williamson's not playing for the Pelicans at all at this moment. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continues to have success with 33, 26 points for Chet Holmgren. That team rolling right now. Oklahoma City getting a nice win to go up 2-0 in that best of seven in the West. Games that are on the docket for tonight. In the NBA playoffs, the Cavs lead the Magic 2-0. Game 3 is at 6 o'clock on NBA TV tonight in Orlando. Game 3, the Knicks and 76ers, 6:30 on TNT in Philadelphia. The Knicks have a 2-0 lead. And the Nuggets, defending champions, lead 2-0 over the Lakers in 9 o'clock tip tonight on TNT in Game 3 there. That Knicks-76ers game on TNT as well. Nuggets-Lakers tonight in L.A. Again, the Nuggets up 2-0 in that series.
Has the puck. Here's Kopitar with an opportunity, and he scores! The Kings captain, Anze Kopitar, the overtime hero for LA, and the Kings steal game 2, 5-4 final score.
Kings getting the win there in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, as that was one of three games on the schedule last night. The Kings have tied the series at 1 each with that win. The Golden Knights went up 2-0 on the Stars with two wins in Dallas. Vegas winning 3-1 last night. And the Bruins winning 4-2 over the Maple Leafs in Game 3 in the East, as Boston now has a 2-1 series lead in that one. Matchups on the docket tonight in the East. First round Game 3s. Florida leads 2-0 over the Lightning. The Panthers are in Tampa to take on the Lightning in Game 3 tonight. And the Hurricanes and Islanders are playing. Carolina leads that series 2-0. Game 3 is at 6:30 in New York tonight. All right, before we take a break and get to the draft, I want to make sure there's nothing really kind of new that's come up here this morning. It doesn't appear so. So when we come back in 30 seconds, we'll talk about NFL draft, the Kansas City Chiefs, where they might go, and also what the NFL draft looks like with some mocks here coming up on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands, extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of four. Call or stop by Kiever Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieverBrothers.com.
All right, back here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94, the NFL draft taking place first round tonight. They'll do second and third rounds tomorrow, and the rest of the draft, 4 through 7, will be over the weekend. So that's coming up here, NFL draft. And the Chiefs picked 32nd. That's what happens when you win the Super Bowl. You get the last pick in the draft. I'll take the last pick in the draft every single year, please. I'm fine with it. Doesn't make a difference to me. If you're winning the Super Bowl every year, get the last pick in the draft, I'm cool with it. It's been the case 2 years in a row for the Chiefs, back-to-back Super Bowl champions, so they've had the 32nd pick. Last year they took hometown hero, I don't know if hero is the right word, but hometown defensive end or edge rusher Felix Anidike-Uzomah from K-State. He didn't provide a lot. It was minimal what he did. He did make a big stop and tackle in the Super Bowl when Charles Minnehue was out with an injury. So Felix actually did show up, and his name was called during the Super Bowl win against the 49ers, the K-State product, and Lee Summit, Missouri product, playing for the Chiefs. And we'll see what happens moving forward with Felix Anidike-Uzomah. We're going to talk about the Chiefs and what they'll do in the draft coming up here, but let's kind of take a look at it. It starts tonight at 7 o'clock. You can watch it on ABC, ESPN, or NFL Network. You've got options. You've got different people that you can watch talking about the draft. I usually watch NFL Network because I don't know. I'm not saying I boycott ESPN, but I just am not a fan of their original produced material. And let's just put it at that. I will probably be watching the NFL Network again tonight for the draft. Again, it starts at 7 o'clock. Chicago Bears have the number one pick as far as some of these mock drafts and what they look like. I don't even know what. I clicked on a mock draft and it brought me to some place. I have no idea why I did it. So, I'm not going to do that either. Anyway, there are a lot of different mock drafts that are out there. Mel Kiper, Daniel Jeremiah, you know, so many of them that do it. But pretty much everybody has the Chicago Bears picking at number one and taking Caleb Williams of USC. The Bears are picking number one, but pretty much everybody on the mock draft is expecting Caleb Williams, the USC and former Oklahoma quarterback, to go number one. And that seems to be universal, and it seems to be universal on mock drafts that Jaden Daniels of the LSU Tigers at quarterback will go number two to the Washington Commanders. There's not a mock draft that I'm looking at that doesn't show that. And then Drake May is on nearly every mock draft, going third to the New England Patriots, the quarterback. So you have a run on quarterbacks right out of the gate, which takes them out. And then now people are saying that J.J. McCarthy might be the fifth pick in the draft. Mel Kiper has J.J. McCarthy going to the Vikings at number five. I just don't really see that, which, that, by the way, that would be a trade. And that'd be a mock trade, because the Chargers actually have the fifth pick. I think it's a major mistake. I'm not saying I don't think J.J. McCarthy can be anything in the NFL, but, well, he traded all the way. I don't even know where Minnesota's supposed to pick here. Let me look at the draft board. The Vikings right now are 11th. And, I'm looking at a guy named Vinny Iyer from the Sporting News, and he has the Vikings taking J.J. McCarthy at 11. I don't understand why you wouldn't be able to wait that long to take J.J. McCarthy. I don't know why he's climbed up these draft boards so quick, and people think that he's just going to be the next starting quarterback that's going to do some things in the NFL. They've got six quarterbacks going in the first round on most of these mock drafts. So J.J. McCarthy of Michigan would be the fourth one. You know, Caleb Williams, USC, Jaden Daniels, LSU, Drake May, UNC, North Carolina are the top three on nearly every mock draft going to the Bears, Commanders, and Patriots. And then you go down further, you got J.J. McCarthy of Michigan, and then Bo Nix from Oregon and Michael Penix Jr. of Washington are all projected to go in the first round on a lot of these mock drafts. I'm kind of looking down the list here. I say a lot of these, but I'm actually looking, and not everybody has all those guys going in the first round. And in fact, Mel Kiper only has four quarterbacks going in the first round. So it'd be very, I don't know how much I trust this Vinny Iyer's mock draft, as he has six quarterbacks going in the first round. And I don't think many of those are really projected to be quite that high. You know, here's five quarterbacks on the mock draft from Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network. What Bo Nix being, actually, he's got six too, but he's got the Broncos taking Bo Nix down at 22. Bo Nix being a top 15 pick as well. I mean, some of these things that you look on these mock drafts, like who's making these and looking at them? So Tom McShay had one. Actually, he's not released a mock draft, actually, but a guy from The Athletic has the Vikings trading up to five and taking J.J. McCarthy. I mean, you're looking at these mock drafts, and first of all, you could look at them all you want and think that these people might know what's going on. I think outside of this year, it seems pretty clear and obvious what's happening with the first three picks, if these are on all the mock drafts, right? With Caleb Williams going number one, Jaden Daniels number two, and Drake May number three. So three straight quarterbacks for the Bears, Commanders, and Patriots, which are all teams that need quarterbacks, right? Because they made moves and made trades and things like that in the offseason here. But it's wild to me to see all these quarterbacks that the people are going to take a chance on, and how many times do you take the chance and then miss and then just go through the process, and it's just like a never-ending thing. And that makes it so special for the Chiefs that they took the quarterback they wanted to move up to 10 and get Patrick Mahomes in the 2017 draft. And they're exactly where they want to be. They're where they planned and wanted to be at this moment in time. And that's extremely, extremely rare to get it to happen, and just to have it happen the way it has for the Chiefs, and to have the amount of success that they've already had in just 7 years with Patrick Mahomes, 6 years as a starter. Well, technically seven, I think. 6 years as a starter, 7 years total, drafted in 2017. In his six seasons, he's led the team to four Super Bowls. So, you know, it's in three Super Bowl championships. It's just crazy to look at all the things that have happened. I think the problem now that we're seeing in the NFL is people are trying to catch that lightning in a bottle. They're trying to find their Patrick Mahomes that's going to lead them to this. And, you know, nobody thought the night Patrick Mahomes was drafted that this would be where the Chiefs would be at this moment in time. I don't think anybody thought that. Even the most diehard of diehard Chiefs fans that trusted the pick and thought Mahomes was going to be outstanding never could have predicted how outstanding he was going to be. I don't buy it. If you say you did, I will call you a liar straight to your face and be like, no, you didn't say it on draft. I didn't say it on draft night. I'll go to my grave telling everybody I wanted the Chiefs to pick Deshaun Watson at that spot when they moved up. I'm happy and pleased to eat crow the rest of my life and be wrong about that the rest of my life. Fine with me. My team wins championships. I'm perfectly fine with it. And I'm fine with admitting that I wanted Deshaun Watson that night. My buddy that I was with can confirm that I was not pleased at the exact moment in time. Now, I adjusted and got used to it, you know, the next day and the days that followed. And then when training camp comes and you're starting to learn a little bit more about this kid. And this Mahomes kid looks pretty good at times during the preseason. And obviously, when he made that start in the last game of the regular season, he felt better about it. But these are processes. They don't always go as fast as what we've seen with Patrick Mahomes. In fact, they rarely go as fast and probably never have gone. I mean, there's nobody that's had a better six-year start than Patrick Mahomes in NFL history at quarterback. That's not disputable. I mean, give me some numbers and try to prove me wrong. It's the first 6 years, not disputable. He has had the best start of a quarterback in NFL history. And so all these teams, the teams that are getting Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, they're trading up to number five for some stupid reason to pick J.J. I'm going to call it what it is in my eyes, in my mind, to pick J.J. McCarthy. I don't have anything against the kid. Hope he has a great career. But that's, I think, the biggest thing is people are just trying to catch lightning in a bottle. This is Vinny Iyer's mock draft, by the way, the guy that has six quarterbacks being taken all within the first 13 picks, has three quarterbacks and three wide receivers as the first six picks. I think a lot of teams put premium on offensive tackles. They put premium on edge rushers. The Chiefs have done that in the past, and you know, I could see them doing that this year. If they could get a good opportunity to trade up and take a tackle, they might do that. Which does lead us into what are the Chiefs going to do here tonight. There are a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, on mock drafts now saying the Chiefs are going to take a wide receiver. Let's go through all this. Vinny Iyer actually has them taking a tackle. Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. Mel Kiper's mock has the Chiefs taking a wide receiver. Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. Also, Daniel Jeremiah has the Chiefs taking a wide receiver, Adonai Mitchell from Texas. Adonai Mitchell and Xavier Worthy are two very popular names for the Chiefs here at this wide receiver spot. Xavier Worthy, especially with his speed and everything. That's obviously a guy that moved up the charts there because of that. But those two Texas wide receivers are being mentioned a lot with the Chiefs here at 32, and some people think the 49ers might take Worthy before that. Some people think that Worthy may even go well before that, like the next mock draft I'm looking at. Dane Brugler from The Athletic has Worthy going up all the way at 23 to the Chargers in a trade. And then the Chiefs taking Adonai Mitchell from Texas at 32. So many mock drafts have the Chiefs taking either Worthy or Mitchell. And it's just like automatically it's a wide receiver. So why is that the case? Well, that's the case because people don't know. People that are doing these mock drafts especially don't know what the situation is with Rashee Rice, with his accident. It wasn't an accident. With his wreck that he caused, him and a buddy that decided to race down a Texas freeway in their high-dollar sports SUVs or cars or whatever, in a Corvette and a Lamborghini SUV. Because of that decision that Rashee Rice and his buddy decided to make on a Saturday night in Dallas, Arlington, wherever, on the freeway. There's now a lot of people that are making mock drafts that don't know what's going to happen with that. You know, obviously, there's legal issues that have to work themselves out, and I would expect nothing less than a six-game suspension from the NFL for Rashee Rice, even if nothing comes from it, and he gets maybe, I don't want to say gets off, but, you know, community service, he gets probation, whatever it might be, he gets, you know, basically a bargain out to not have to spend any time in jail or anything like that, and they plea out of all that, or they reach an agreement before they even have to do all that, whatever. I don't I actually don't think Rasheed Rice is going to be removed from the Chiefs team. I think that once this does go through the system, that he probably won't spend any time in. I would predict he won't spend any time in jail, and he will join the Chiefs again and will have to sit out for at least 6 games due to the NFL's personal conduct policy. But here's the thing. I think the Chiefs probably know more about what's going on that inside their walls than they're going to tell anybody, and that anybody outside that's making a mock draft knows. So the thing for me is, if Rasheed Rice is back, you've signed Hollywood Brown, you've got receivers, you do not have to go out and get another wide receiver. Wide receiver does not have to be the undisputed top priority for the Chiefs going into tonight's first-round pick, whatever they decide to do. I think an offensive tackle will be great. Clearly, you got aging guys there that you know, you might not want playing there for too long, or you got young guys that maybe haven't panned out the way you'd like them to. I don't think you can ever have too many offensive linemen in your stable to try to pick from and put together the best line you can, because you want to protect your billion-dollar investment in Patrick Mahomes. So anytime you're thinking about a lineman, I think that's good. Listen, if they need a wide receiver and things aren't going well with Rasheed Rice and you think you're going to lose him maybe for an entire season, then yeah, make sure you go out and maybe get a wide receiver here in the first 2 rounds if that's what you've identified as something you need. Chiefs have won 2 Super Bowls in a row without having top-flight wide receivers. I'm just going to put it out there. We always, I think, feel like every year we're thinking about what weapons can we get for Patrick Mahomes. Well, if your defense plays like it did last year, your thought process of having to have all these weapons is not the same anymore. Hollywood Brown, we'll see what he can do. They got him on a decent deal, right? Justin Watson still with this team, if I remember right. I don't have that roster right in front of me, but I can actually pick it up and look at it here in a moment. As far as some of the other drafts, some other names that have been mentioned, Georgia wide receiver Ladd McConkey is picked by Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports on that 32nd pick. Missouri cornerback Ennis Rakestraw Jr. from Bucky Brooks at NFL.com. Adonai Mitchell, Donnie Mitchell, we've already said. Kingsley, I don't know, Suamatia from BYU, tackle from the Sporting News is a guy that's on there. We got another McConkey, Mitchell. McConkey and Mitchell seem to be the most popular picks on kind of an overall basis. And if Worthy is there from Texas, then that would be who they would like. Listen, I think if Xavier Worthy's there at 32, no matter what they were deciding to do, I really think they probably will take him just because of who he is, what he brings to the table speed-wise. If he's not there, I'm not at all guaranteeing or saying for sure that they're going to take a wide receiver, whether that's Mitchell or McConkey. I'm not in on it. Like I don't think that they have to take a wide receiver at 32, even if Rasheed Rice is suspended for the entire year. I think you go with the flow, you look at it and see what you think, and that's what the Chiefs are going to do. Brett Veach is going to have a board. They're going to look at all this. They're not going to, you know, narrow and pigeonhole themselves into either a wide receiver or a tackle or whatever it might be. They're going to look at their board and see what's the best, and Brett Veach kind of talked about that earlier this week.
I think once you get past like pick 35 or 40, most of those guys are gone. So if you're picking in the top 10, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking in the top 15, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking 32 and 64, you got a shot maybe here or there. So I think that goes into, you know, the additional work we put in and putting a strategy together and what guys might be worth a move depending on how it all plays out, and you know what other positions are going to provide top end value if say an O lineman or receiver isn't there, and you know, do you go corner, do you go defensive line? I think that there are some interesting pockets there. So I think the good thing is that, like every year, there's a lot of good players.
That's Brett Veach. Yeah, L'Jarius Sneed is not on the team anymore. Do you go corner? Do you find, like he just said, a defensive lineman? What do you find? They did a really good job, actually, of getting some of these guys re-signed. You know, guys that are back that not a lot of people are really thinking about that have been very important to this team. So I don't know if defensive line would be the top of my priority list right now, but I do know that you know, offensive linemen, like I said, are always, you know, it's never a bad thing to kind of look at that and see what the Chiefs have. Kind of looking at the roster for the Chiefs, they do have 12 wide receivers right now on the roster. Hollywood Brown, Kadarius Toney, they're still talking about how, you know, maybe he could be something big for this team. in the end, and still somebody that everybody thinks is going to maybe still pan out. Brett Veach is still talking about him. Sky Moore's still on this team at wide receiver. Rashee Rice, we don't know his situation. Justin Ross, who had the injury last year, we've talked a lot about him. And then Justin Watson as well. Yeah, your tackles, because you got Jawan Taylor, you got Lucas Niang. Wanya Morris is probably projected to be the starting tackle right now because they have not re-signed Donovan Smith. So, again, that's where they're at there. Yeah, they've really done a nice job of keeping their defensive line pretty much intact. So I don't know defensive line-wise, especially in the interior, what they really need from that aspect. Chris Jones, Derek Nottie, Mike Pinnell, Tershawn Wharton, who have been mainstays here over the last couple of years, have been huge at plugging up the middle for this defense and the defensive line. I kind of like the way that where they're at right there, and don't think that they need to take a first-round flyer on a defensive lineman right now yet, because Chris Jones has been extended. And, again, there's other options there. Linebacker be interesting without Willie Gay anymore. So Drew Tranquil will probably move into that starting role in the middle linebacker position. Nick Bolton's there. But yeah, corner is definitely something that you're looking at, because without Legarius Sneed, who's just been almost locked down at times and just did an outstanding job and got the deal on the trade to the Titans, so he's no longer there. So you got Trent McDuffie, Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams that have a lot of experience. Echo Boydo from K-State is on the roster right now as a corner. So I would definitely be looking for, you know, corners, defensive backs, maybe guys that can do a little bit of both. You know, Tyrann Mathieu type player wouldn't be bad, probably, maybe to go after in this draft if you can find something like that that can kind of plug in and fill a couple roles. And I know Justin Reed is kind of that at safety, but I don't think it's crazy to have a few different guys like that on your team that can do a lot of different things. So, again, it'll be interesting to see where the Chiefs go. If there's a tackle there, I think that's where they'll go. And I also think that prioritizing, if Xavier Worthy's not there at 32, a wide receiver from Texas, I think that prioritizing just what Brett Veach said there, and he's not going to give away what they're planning on doing. He's not going to give a lot of like insight inside particular details, but I really do think that their priority would be a corner above a wide receiver right now. That's what I would want, just based on losing Legarius Sneed. Because if you can keep this defense like it was last year, or keep it somewhat as good as it was last year, then that takes so much pressure off of Patrick Mahomes and that offense and Andy Reid and his play calling, like we saw last year, right? And so if you can do that, I personally, in my mind, would prioritize a corner over a wide receiver. But again, that's not knowing completely the situation with Rashee Rice. That's what I think, that Rashee Rice will still be on this team and will be back on the team playing at some point during this upcoming season. Again, he could get a full year suspension by the NFL, and that would obviously change what's going on. But I can say if the Chiefs don't take a wide receiver at 32 tonight in a situation where you think they might have reached, then I think that might be an indicator that Rashee Rice is probably going to be playing with the Chiefs this year. And again, I don't think there's any doubt that there's going to be some kind of suspension coming for Rashee Rice, whether he's with the Chiefs or whether he goes to another team or gets picked up by another team because the Chiefs released him because of the off-the-field issues. But again, I don't think that the Chiefs are going to release him, and I think that it'll probably be like a 6-game max suspension for Rashee Rice. It's not in the NFL, he's not had a reputation yet of being a quote-unquote bad apple, right? This is right now an isolated one-time incident. Obviously, that could change as his career goes on, and he might see some things happen in the wrong direction for Rashee Rice. But as of now, this is a one-time incident that you use and you try to learn from. The NFL is going to tell him that. They're going to teach him that by suspending him for, I think, 6 games, maybe 7 or 8. I don't know. But, you know, 6 is kind of a baseline for a lot of these type of things. So I don't think it's going to go past 6. It might actually even be less than 6. I don't know, for the first-time thing. But I don't think that you're going to lose an entire season of Rashee Rice. So I don't think the Chiefs need to reach at wide receiver just to try to fill that need, because Rashee Rice might not be part of this team for a third of the season-ish, right? So it will be interesting to see what the Chiefs do. Again, my priorities would probably be a tackle if you can find one that's like NFL ready and ready to get out there and possibly start mid-season or maybe in his second year. You know, that's the thing with Felix Anidike-Uzomah. They went out and got Charles Omenihu to kind of bridge that gap. And Omenihu is back on the team this coming year. And they've got Mike Dana. They've re-signed him. George Karloftis is still on the team. So they've got options there on the edge still, too. And Felix can still continue to learn, and maybe he'll flourish in training camp and then break out this year in his second year with the Chiefs. So, I mean, there's always those options of, like, work with – get a guy that you can work with and not have to just rush him right out there. And if you're a Super Bowl champion, typically you've got guys that are ready to go. You're not going to be able to keep everybody that won and that was on the team that won the Super Bowl for you. You're going to have attrition. You're going to have people turning over, roster transformations every year. But this is an opportunity here for the Chiefs to find a guy that maybe a tackle that they can develop or a corner that they can develop and have, you know, Jalen Watson step in, Joshua Williams step into that starting role that's left vacant by Legarius Sneed. So there are a lot of issues with this team that I would address. I don't say issues. There are a lot of positions on this team that maybe need filled that I would address before wide receiver. Maybe not a lot, but two. Tackle and corner, I would put a little bit higher than wide receiver, maybe even middle linebacker without Willie Gay and Drew Tranquil. You know, he had to play a lot as a backup last year and started a lot of games because of injuries to Bolton and Gay. So I may even put a linebacker, middle linebacker, ahead of wide receiver right now. I mean, people just – it's just the way it is. I mean, people want those flashy players. They want offense, 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 and that's all they focus on. And if I'm focusing on offense, it's going to be a tackle. If I'm focusing on defense, it's a corner and a linebacker and middle linebacker. And we'll see where we go from there because, man, if you just like sell out and panic like everybody else and just be like, oh, pick a wide receiver. Doesn't matter if I'm reaching here at 32. We need a wide receiver. We need Ladd McConkey. Well, maybe you don't. Maybe you need a tackle that is going to be your starting tackle because Wanya Morris goes down or Lucas Niang goes down yet again. You know, maybe that would be more important than a wide receiver when you really don't know exactly and feel 100% comfortable with who one of your tackles is going to be this year on the right side or left side, I guess. So, yeah, that would be – I'd focus a little bit more on that. Just me. Draft starts tonight at 7 o'clock in Detroit. Watch it. ABC, ESPN, NFL Network. I'll be locked on NFL Network tonight, 7 o'clock, NFL Draft. And tomorrow on the Sports Ticket, we'll talk about the Chiefs, who they picked. Did they trade up? That's always a possibility, too, if they identify somebody they really like. And since the draft is not in Kansas City this year, there's always the possibility that they trade down. I absolutely despise the thought of the Chiefs trading down because I'm going to be sitting there. All the Chiefs fans will be sitting there the entire night waiting for the final pick of the first round tonight, and then the Chiefs will be like, oh, we're trading out. And you're like, oh, I could have been in bed already. I hope that doesn't happen. Have a great day, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.